As an attempt to fight homophobia, during the AIDS crisis of the late 80s, LGBT folks put a lot of pressure on each other to come out of the closet. After all, silence equals death. Throughout her life, one of the entertainers most widely speculated about was Whitney Houston, who was long rumored to be hiding her bisexuality. In Kevin MacDonald's new documentary, Whitney, we get a glimpse at the life of the greatest vocalist of the 20th century, her complex sexuality, her underlying trauma, and the struggles that may have led to her untimely death.
Today, Vivacious from RuPaul's Drag Race joins us to take a look at the new Whitney film and all its shocking new revelations. Plus, lots of other great TV shows you must watch.
Ryan Murphy's new series, Pose, gives trans actors a chance to shine.
Nanette, Hannah Gadsby's groundbreaking comedy special becomes a viral sensation.
And Sacha Baron Cohen's Who is America? Has Republicans shaking in their boots. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello?
Hello, Vivacious.
Hey, hey.
How you doing, my love?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
We just saw the Whitney documentary, and it shook me to the core.
What happened on that thing?
Honey, it's like Whitney Houston had God give her everything. It was the story of Job. God gave her everything and then took it away.
Mm. I can see that kind of happening to Whitney.
When I think of home, I think of a place. You know, I too learn how to sing in the church. Did you guys know that?
I did not know that. What church would that be, Faust?
The Episcopalian Church.
Oh.
And I know it sounds like I grew up in a black church, and it was a Puerto Rican Episcopalian church that had a lot of Americans in it, you know. But yeah, I learned how to sing in the church.
Wow. Can you sing a little something for us?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day when Jesus washed.
Yeah,
it was a long time ago, but
what you should have done, you should have just bust out and started singing supercalifragilistic. That would have thrilled everybody.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Yes, keep going, bitch. Keep going.
Even though the sound of it is somewhat quite atrocious.
If you say it loud enough, it sounds like Trump.
Well, this is the thing. Like, when I came of age, what are you doing, by the way, in the background? You're like playing.
You did some voodoo on us or something?
Yeah,
what are you got some beads going on there? What's up?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything. Why you ask?
It was a tic tac. What's that noise?
Nothing.
She's winding up her clock. Her cuckoo clock, so she has in the corner. No,
right.
So when I came of age in the early 90s, Whitney Houston was somebody that a lot of people were speculating about her sexuality. And the reason that a lot of LGBT folks talked about people who were in the closet was because we were facing the AIDS crisis. And we understood that one important thing we needed to do in order to fight that crisis was to put pressure on each other and ourselves to speak our truths. And we felt that Whitney Houston, being probably arguably one of the greatest vocalists of all time and definitely one of the most successful artists, all these rumors were going around that one of her friends, lifelong friends, Robin Crawford, mm-hmm. was her lover,
mm-hmm.
and that she had married Bobby Brown and that was just trying to subvert it. So it was really refreshing and eye-opening to actually see this documentary and actually see what exactly was going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, I mean, because they don't come out and say that she and Robin were lovers, but one of the persons is very close to her is like, you know, Whitney likes sex and she was very fluid with her sexuality.
And honey, and we used to say this on the podcast here, it's like, it would be a lot of fun to get high with Whitney Houston and have sex.
Oh my God. I don't want to even picture that part. Oh God.
Yes, honey. Whitney, if you can hear me in heaven.
Crack is whack, bitch. Leave me alone.
Wait, show me the receipts.
She did say crack is whack in the movie in the thing, right? But she did not say show me the receipts, right?
In the movie, they didn't use the clip from her interview with Diane Sawyer. But I didn't realize that Whitney Houston was part of a Just Say No anti-drug campaign, and that crack is whack was a slogan that she had said early on in her music career.
If I'm correct, I think her and Michael did one of those back then.
A lot of artists did at the time. Pee Wee Herman did one. Google it.
Somebody in the documentary said that Whitney used to just go up to Michael's house and they would just hang out and not even talk. They would just sit in the room together.
It's kind of like the opposite of right now, you know,
because they knew what each other were going through.
Right. Well, did you hear within the last week after Joe Jackson died that Michael, that the doctor for them said that Joe Jackson had Michael Jackson chemically castrated so he could keep a high voice?
Yes, I heard that.
That makes a lot of sense.
That would kind of explain and give a little bit of depth into why Michael had this interesting life.
Is chemically castrating the correct medical term to delay adolescence?
I think that was one form of it back then, yes. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what he would have done to do that. Like, what's that process really like? Because I know like some pedophiles, interestingly enough, go through that. You know, they get chemically castrated.
By the government.
By the state. By whatever state they're in, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting that it was like Michael was accused of being a pedophile and he got chemically castrated before he could have been a pedophile, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's possibly why he had a sort of an asexual
lifestyle, because his sexuality was literally ripped away from him by his evil father.
And this is the thing, like, you know, in reflection of Whitney Houston's life and Michael Jackson's life, I want to intelligently talk about how racism affects these highly successful African American artists. And I'm at a loss for words to talk about it, but it's one thing that I'm sort of thinking about is that the whole family puts so much pressure on Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson because they were just became these enormously commercially successful artists.
They looked at them as a money cash cow, and so they would try to wield whatever exertion over them to keep them doing that. So it's not like they even really had a life. They literally had to get up, eat, sleep, repeat, and do what their function was supposed to be. And it takes a toll after a while. And you know, it's a shame that you know. Two of the most famous black artists on the planet have such a morbid and sad past when you start to delve into their lives.
Like the great bombshell of the Whitney Houston documentary, Whitney, is that she was sexually molested by her aunt.
Cousin.
Her cousin, Dee Dee Warwick.
Mm-hmm. But I also feel like the thing with the documentary, though, too, is like they, you know, they kind of cover that towards the end, leading us to believe that maybe that's the reason why she became an addict. And certainly for some people, that might be a part of the reason. But
I would put that under, you know, when you do a bad edit to leave that ending of leaving people guessing. I felt that if anything, maybe that's something that they should have covered earlier on in that whole thing. Because at the end of the day, neither Dee Dee nor Whitney can defend themselves in this whole scenario. You know, they are both not here anymore. And in terms of Cece and Dion, which is Whitney's aunt and Whitney's mother, to try to grasp themselves around this at this late day and age, because this only came out recently, this is very hard for them to deal with right now.
Well, it's also like I'm trying to understand exactly if how much cooperation they had behind this. This is the second documentary on Whitney Houston's life.
If I'm correct with this one, according to Cece, according to the mother, Neither her nor Dion nor her kids were contacted regarding this. This was done through other parties in terms of like from Robin's side and from other people given all this information. Mm-hmm. So if there's a statement out where the mother is like, we had no part in this documentary that Kevin McDonald put together. Mm.
But it seems like it was independently verified through several parties. Mm-hmm. So at least that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was verified through different parties who have had that intimate role with Whitney over the years. As a matter of fact, they said that when the family was very good at red taping to get Whitney to do stuff, it was Robin who actually helped made a lot of things possible for Whitney to do them because Robin was the one who broke through the red tape. So it seems as though the family, to a certain extent, spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to control and contain Whitney. And I think the reason why they didn't like Robin was because Robin was that voice of protection for Whitney, but also that person who would let Whitney know what was going on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they didn't like the fact that Robin had that inside to Whitney that they couldn't control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, also like Robin Crawford, her lifetime friend, a possible lesbian relationship. You know, she was also sort of an independent voice against the father who obviously was... you know, sued her for $100 million. Mm-hmm. She didn't go to his funeral, and that was the end of their like relationship after that lawsuit.
Well, for sure, and part of the reason why the father became such a big presence in Whitney's life towards the end is because Robin was out of the picture because she said to Whitney, "He's like, listen, it's either me or Bobby. You got to make a choice because this guy's no good for you." And she's just like, "I accept your resignation."
There's between what we recently heard and what we've known growing up with Whitney all along, though, you know, there's a lot of truth. It's like we've heard those rumors all those years, you know, and then this documentary just opens up this other light to it. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just want to remember Whitney as the greatest singer ever. And, you know, the whole background of what transpired, to me, that's just let it be.
It feels like a story that's all too common is that these artists yes. come from very humble origins. They yes. become super successful and you know, towards the end of their lives, they're struggling financially. They're abandoned by the very industry that helped build them up.
Entity, yeah. Well, you know, you got to understand, you know, In the conspiracy theory realm, they believe that Whitney at the end was set up by the industry. She was made as a life sacrifice because at the end she didn't live up to her responsibilities. So she was killed. I mean, think about this. She died in the same building they were about to do an award show at, and they kept the show going. That's just wrong.
That's interesting.
Kind of creepy. It was kind of like an Illuminati sacrifice to a certain extent. No, well, seriously.
I always thought that tub that she did at the Beverly Hills Hotel, like, I always thought those tubs were a lot bigger. It didn't look that big.
No, it didn't.
Well, you know, I think over the years, they probably downscaled the tub size and the sizes of the room to make more rooms on each floor. But I'm
they
sure
showed
back
the
in
tub,
the early-
honey. They showed the tub in the video, and it didn't look like it was. I mean, it looked deep. But it didn't look like it was like this giant, enormous tub you just go swim in. But she did. She had a heart attack, right? And she just slipped right in and drowned.
Yeah. I guess the water kept running and it puddled all over the room.
I believe somebody went in there and helped Whitney to her watery death.
That's really?
What I believe. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be that black conspiracy queen who's going to stick to that story. You know, because think about it, when she made that comeback and it was that New Year's and she was supposed to sing the high note and it sounded like the Titanic hitting the iceberg and crashing into 9 million pieces. At that point, it's like the industry was like, okay, it's time to kill that bitch.
Mm.
And they started to slowly write her ending, and her ending happened like, what, 3 months later? Weird. Crazy.
Well, I don't listen. I think it's pretty far fetched to say that she was murdered. Although, you know, they say that like the cost of keeping the celebrities alive is really expensive. Like Elvis, was, and Whitney, Elvis.
You just said it. You said the cost of keeping celebrities alive after they've passed their fame.
By their families or by the record label?
No, but just
by the record labels, it's easier to kill them.
Even their own family. Like, look at Elvis. Elvis was nearly broke at the time of his death because they cost so much money to maintain, because you have to like fly them around, you have to feed them, you have to house them and stuff like that. But now, like, Whitney's dead, you don't have to do any of that, but yet she's still making some money, right?
Well, not necessarily. No, by killing them, they make more money because of the dead royalties, because think about when Michael Jackson died and how much money they said they made in less than like 6 months compared to his overall career.
Yeah, and then you don't have to pay to keep him alive. Like, you don't have to pay for all his you know, lifestyle. Michael was expensive.
No, the record label. You know how expensive Propofol is?
Girl.
Well, I believe after you take Propofol, you become Propofol.
I wonder how many people have like gone in for surgery and they're like, oh, we're going to put you under with Propofol. And they're like, after Michael Jackson, that drug is ruined forever.
That like well, you know that they used to use it to put people in the prison system.
Oh, really? For what?
Yes, propofol is one of the forms of drugs that they would use when they sentence people to death.
Really?
Shit.
Yes. Wow. Look it up. To the point where after that whole thing with Michael Jackson went down, different prisons decided to take that off the shelf as one of the forms of sentencing them afterwards, because it became just this bad thing. It's like it was given a bad name.
Mm. So what can we learn from the tortured lives of like artists like Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson?
Fame comes with a price.
Well, that's what the introduction to the TV show Fame said. You want fame? Well, fame costs. And here is where you pay with sweat. And,
I mean, think about it. Do you know what's happening with Stan Lee right now? He's going half blind. He's close to dying.
He's 97 years old.
Something like that. But his family is also embezzling money from him left and right, and saying that he signed all these checks and all. There's a whole fight right now over his estate.
Casey Kasem had the same thing happen.
You know, and in terms of Whitney Houston, the only person who really profited from Whitney Houston's life was all the record labels and Dolly Parton.
Well, that's the thing. It was, you know, I don't know if people have to realize, is like, unless you write the song, you're not going to make money from it when it plays on the radio.
Exactly. So
like, yeah.
And that's the reason why I wrote my own track, Ornatia, and that's the reason why I produced my own track, Ornatia. So in the end, when she gets royalties, they will come to me.
yes, they will.
Oh, Natia. Don't sing anymore because you have to pay Vivacious for that.
You girl, I'm not. Listen, only the RIAA would come and charge you guys for singing my track. I would never do that. I'm not from that cloth. I'm not cut like that, because I'm what? Sickening.
Don't play me. So what is it? That is, don't play me low.
Oh, that's Oprah. I'm not sure. That's Oprah. So don't play me low like that.
Yeah.
Small.
Don't play me small like that. I agree with that.
Vivacious, have you been watching Pose?
I have fully caught up. So just so you know, I just came back from Australia. It was 2.5 weeks of performing and touring and relaxing.
Oh, Jaws beautiful. Down Under, huh?
Beautiful. It was so beautiful down under. They should have been right on top. And while I was there, what I was missing was the last 3 episodes of Pose. So within the last 48 hours, I finally was able to get out of my jet lag and sat down and watched the last 3 episodes. And the thing that I love about Pose is 90% of the people that you see on the show are all actual physical friends of mine that I've known for over 27 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Who are you friends with?
Every single last one of them. I've known them for 27 years. Those are all the people that I grew up with.
Damn. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Can you get someone on the podcast?
Huh?
Can you get someone on the podcast?
If you tell me who, I'll make it happen. If you know, want If you want the head of the House of Abundance, she's a very close, good friend of mine. Mm. If you want MJ, she has a very tight schedule, but I can do the best that I can. Mm-hmm. All their numbers are on my phone on speed dial. I'm sure if you've gone into old pictures from when I did Battle Hymn on Sundays, you will see I'm hanging out with Hexer Extravaganza, who plays one of the judges on the show. I'm sure if you look closely, you will see me with India Glamstar, who plays a judge. You will see me with Lee Soldier, who plays a judge. There are old pictures of Tyra and myself from way back in the day somewhere.
Well, the one I would love to talk to is Angelica Ross, star of Her Story, who plays Candy Abundance, co-founder of the House of Ferocity. She's a
Chicago girl.
She's a Chicago girl.
I don't know if she lives here now. She's probably out in LA.
She's down in LA, yeah. She's friends with Jen Richards.
Okay. I know who y'all talking about.
We actually met her while we were filming a certain Cooking with Drag Queens.
Yeah.
I don't know her personally, but I know all the New York children.
Mm. She's an angel. She is elegance personified.
It's not elegance, it's eloquence.
Eleganza.
Well, this is the thing, not to get backtrack to Whitney, but it's like, you know, people are all talking about, like, shame on you for finding, you know, Whitney Houston at her cracked out time in her life funny. And part of it was like, Whitney Houston was this perfect singer and image, this angel, this, you know, distinguished, elegant woman who could just sing anything and turn any modest song into a hit. And then see that perfection crack was tragic and hilarious, you know? And to me, it's like, we will never have another Whitney like her.
I don't find what happened to her to be hilarious.
People made lots of jokes though, you know?
Listen, show me the receipts you were sending 5 minutes ago. Don't play me low like that. You were just making jokes about show me the receipts 5 minutes ago.
I don't think there's anything funny about it because it's somebody's life.
It is. But at the same time, we all can laugh at ourselves and laugh at our misfortune.
In order not to make it be so serious, you have to try to find a joke so that it doesn't hurt so much.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people grew up listening to Whitney. I grew up with Whitney, so it hurts me twice as much.
The first cassette that I ever bought was Whitney Houston's debut album, and I listened to the fuck out of that thing on my yellow Walkman.
When I first started going out into the clubs is when her songs were like big and they were huge, and we were dancing into them like for the first time. It was amazing.
Yeah.
To me, like, you know, it's what's so great about the world we live in today, because there's a lot of sadness right now with Trump basically, you know, marrying Vladimir Putin. It's just this rise of really distinguished, charismatic, transcendent African-American artists that are not just lovely as performers, but also extremely LGBT themselves and appealing to LGBT people. And so someone like Angelica Ross, and I know I don't want to be like kissing her ass because she probably is going to hear this, but I think she strikes me as somebody as refined and beautiful as Whitney Houston.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think
Whitney
she's wonderful.
Houston was one of the greatest talents.
I'm exaggerating.
The greatest talents the world has ever known.
Yes.
And it's hard. And that's why we're so interested in Whitney, is because she was just this bigger than life, beautiful woman that had this incredible voice. And then just to see her just fuck it all up. It's tragic.
Well, you know, I think Whitney's life was surrounded with a lot of yes men, and it wasn't people who could give her a real. I think that the minute that Robin left Whitney was when her life fully started to crumble in two ways. She didn't have that support anymore of that lover she couldn't even acknowledge because the family and their taboos with their religion. And so when Robin left, you know, there was not that person anymore to tell Whitney, you can't do this, you can't do that, stop doing this, stop doing that, because everybody else was afraid, let me not stop Whitney from doing X, Y, and Z because she'll fire me and I just want my paycheck.
And we certainly know a lot of people that way in other industries, and certainly it's like, you know, I would like to think that Robin Crawford doesn't blame herself for Whitney Houston's death, because she's
Robin, you are not responsible for Whitney's death, because the family also did everything to extricate you and remove you from Whitney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's not.
Yeah. The brother during one of the talking heads was just like talking about her as though she were evil.
He hates her. Yeah. That brother hates her. You know, it's so funny. The brother hates Robin. However, it's those brothers who introduce Whitney to drugs.
Mm hmm. Well, they all kind of discover drugs around the same time, you know?
No. In an interview done about a year and a half ago with Oprah Winfrey, the brother looked the mother in the eye and said, at around age 16 or so, I physically gave Whitney her first vial of crack. And the mother sat there with this shock look from her Christian mingle.
But she wasn't much older. He wasn't much older. They were all around the same age.
Sweetie, listen, stop. Because I'm around their age, and even I knew from age 8 that crack is whack, so why couldn't she?
Well, we all knew crack was whack, but we did it anyway. It was the 80s. It was everywhere.
I never did anything. My sisters, who could have been fierce drug dealers, didn't touch any of that stuff.
Well, you are a little younger than Whitney, though.
I've smoked crack. I mean, one time, but it was like in early 1991. And it was like, I could see why somebody who's going through a lot of emotional pain would be attracted to this drug. You know, if Gary Houston in the documentary, he looked like he was about to drop dead. He looked pale. Well, he looked sickly.
Maybe he has jaundice from all this time.
He did not look well. You know, he looked guilty. And, I just want to say to all these people out there, I forgive yourselves. You did the best you could. You guys grew up in a chaotic, crazy, insane environment. You know,
that gave you access to anything you want, and you would not be denied.
Yeah. You know, every time I'm struggling to pay a bill, I just go, I'm glad that this is the biggest struggle that I face. Is money. It's not love. It is not, sanity.
It's not a drug.
Yeah. It's not, sadness. It's not self-esteem. It's not creativity. It's money.
Do you remember back then when there was a thing talking about how Whitney Houston's father was going out of the way to try to stop the drug dealers from getting drugs to Whitney? Like, this was a thing that was on the news back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, he got into altercations with these drug dealers, stop giving my daughter drugs.
Struck me too was the her music producer from Arista Records. He said they spent millions of dollars one summer trying to record her final album, and every day she'd just be like, "Oh, baby, let's do this tomorrow," And they showed footage of them like recording, that she would record in the middle, like pitch black rooms with candles burning around, and like he was like, "Let's go get some soup, Whitney." And then he was also in the room when that notorious interview where she says crack is whack, show me the receipts, with Diane Sawyer, and he was like, "What are we doing here? She should be like resting or recording or performing, but doing this interview is not helping her at all."
And she did seem like she did get it together towards the end of her life. She was, when they did her autopsy, they said they found no drugs, because she had been in rehab. She had done in a film, Sparkle. They said like in the beginning she didn't look so good, but towards the end of it she was really into it, and it almost seemed like she was turning that road.
But I'll tell you one thing, and we all know this about addiction, is addicts get very good about hiding their addiction.
That's true.
Hiding in plain sight. And part of it
you can't fake toxicology.
And, maybe, the family held that report. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that she had overcome all her demons, but I also think it's conceivable that the family would have hidden the true nature of her death.
Is that possible? I don't think you can really bribe a medical examiner from another state. Remember, she didn't die in Jersey where her family lives or where she's from. This happened in California. There's no way that you can. And you also, there's this, I believe that even medical examiners like to spill the tea on deaths of actors and actresses just to give that, relay that message of, yeah, and you try to put them on a pedestal, and I'm going to use my scientific findings to remind you that they were human and take them out of that realm of a superstar and make them as normal as possible. Because those medical examiners love to go, and he died of X, he died of Y, he died of Z, and you're like, ooh. You know, when that medical examiner gives that final verdict, it brings it back down to a human level. You know, it takes away that whole superficial world that they live in. They're like, what? You mean she died the same thing that I had? Oh, snap.
If everybody listening to this, definitely go check out the Whitney documentary, Pose, the TV series. Amazing. And another show we really recommend you guys check out is Netflix viral stand-up special of Australian comedian Hannah Gadsby, Nanette, which starts off very innocently. She's kind of comes across as this Australian Ellen joking about naps and, you know, her gender ambiguity. And it then becomes a roller coaster ride of darkness, of humor and comedy, questioning culture, femininity, comedy, theater, life itself. And it crumbles you up and spits you out. It is the most powerful performance you will see this year. Hannah Gadsby deserves an Emmy or some kind of award for that performance. It is outstanding.
It was really an amazing performance. We're going to have on next week, Colette Gregory is going to come back and talk to us about the special, because, you know, she's a comedian and she has, you know, she talks about a lot of the same themes that Hannah talks about. So it'll be interesting to get her perspective on that.
I'm just wondering is Hannah Gadsby really stopped? Is she done with stand-up comedy? Is she leaving that field like she said she was?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, it's extraordinary. Vivacious, how are you handling living in a post Aquaria queen world and dead butterflies from the season finale of RuPaul's Drag Race?
Because we are living in an Aquaria world, and I am an Aquaria girl.
Now, Aquaria is a drag queen that you recommended to the producers of Drag Race.
Yeah, I did it. I had my reasons why I wanted to. It was two. I recommended her and Miss Cracker. One was because I always heard that there was a rivalry between them, but I didn't realize it was going to be something that would actually play out on TV. I thought it was actually a joke. But when I did meet Miss Cracker, she did say the person who helped her improve her makeup was Miss Cracker, and Miss Cracker had nothing but extremely nice things to say about Aquaria. And I've known Aquaria for a while now. I met her when she was a freshman, and she did a pageant at her school, and she dropped out and decided to pursue drag. And I was worried that, you know, because New York is a town with a whole bunch of shady ass apes that call themselves drag queens in charge of these clubs. Mm-hmm. When they meet talented girls like Aquaria, they love to kiss the owner's ass and management asses so that they can stay working and make sure that queens like Aquaria don't have jobs. A lot of the girls that run these clubs in New York City will only book queens who are less talented than them, who looks uglier than them. They will never put a queen. I'm not joking. They will never put a.
Is that why you hardly work at all in New York?
Yes, bitch. They can't handle me. No one can handle me. But it's not just me alone. It goes for other queens, such as Ebony XL, Jasmine Van Wales. There's a whole Brenda Holder, you know, Harmonica Sunbeam, Ivana Black. These are queens that would dust all these bitches to death in 5 seconds, but they would never get the job in that club whatsoever because these other queens feel threatened by them.
Is that why I'm not getting gigs as a drag queen in Chicago? Wait a minute. I am actually performing tonight.
You are?
At the Call Bar. Come, guys, you want to see me in drag and show how sexy and gorgeous and charismatic and unique and terrifying, right? That's what spells out C-U-N-T, right? Mm-hmm. Charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and terrifying.
Mm-hmm. That's it on all four counts.
Baby, I got it in spades and in abundanza, eleganza. Mm-hmm. That's going to be at the Call Bar at 10 p.m. tonight. Yeah. You don't want to miss it. And afterwards, we'll go hang out and have snacks.
I'm also going to bring the dog, too. I'm teaching Jesse to snatch dollar bills. So
from the crowd.
From the crowd. So they, bring your dollar bills and give it to Jesse. And we're going to work on this together.
That would be fierce if you could teach your dog how to snatch dollars, honey.
Because yes, honey.
You just let him go in the crowd and have Jesse run up to each person, snatch the dollar, and bring it back to the stage.
That's right.
That's better. And then holding a bucket that says Tiping is a city in China, you know. So
that's racist. Yeah.
Tiping.
No, listen, sweetie, that what? Used to be the message that Miss Understood used to have on her buckets at Lucky Chang. So I'm not saying anything differently than what used to be on the buckets in the store in a restaurant that I used to work in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
It's not racist.
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious. You know, Lady Bunny today just made a comment about how we're getting too politically correct.
Yeah, I saw that on her Facebook.
I'm not sure what she's talking, you know, Lady Bunny.
Well, this is the point. Yeah. This is the point.
What's the point she's trying to make?
And she's like, okay, all of you people out there that are fat shaming people. Against slut shaming, against fat shaming, against shaming people for this and this and this. And like, yet, you know, but you're saying like Trump's fat and he's ugly and you're using all this stuff against him. He's like, where do you guys draw the line? So you hate it when they do it against somebody in your own party, but when against the other party, you do it.
Well, I think part of it is like, you know, I'm fine. Like Trump is so much bigger of a problem than his body or the strangeness of the relationship between him and Putin. It doesn't bother me to hear people like, you know, make a gay joke about Trump and Putin. But the problem with that is this idea that if somebody is really anti-gay, that they're closeted gay makes actual gay people responsible for your homophobia. Because not all bigots secretly desire the thing they hate. And Trump and Putin just might be assholes. The monsters are not secretly gay for each other or anything. And they're just trying to, you know, swindle and rob the world. I mean, seeing right now, you know, Trump basically, like, you know, practically everything so short of making out with Putin is extraordinary.
You know, it's so funny. It's like straight folks have a way of trying to make things that gay people do, LGBT people do. They try to make it seem like it's a negative thing. Like, you cocksucker, bitch. There is glory and aspirations in being a cocksucker. Being normal like your straight ass is the problem on this planet. You know, it's like, don't try to use what LGBT people do and try to turn it into a bad vernacular. There's nothing negative about what we do. You know, so to turn two straight men and go, oh, look, they're making out. Ew, that's gross. No, that's absolutely beautiful.
One time I was in Berlin and I saw two straight guys do a performance art piece about homophobia by trying to force each other to have sex with each other. And it looked like it was so disturbing and fucked up. And all the people in the room were like, what the hell is going on here? It looked like two guys who were trying to like rape each other in front of an audience.
Well, I guess some people have some people like to use a bad context to portray what they think LGBT love is, you know, and if they show it the right way, they think that it might put a disturbing thought in people's mind and go, there isn't anything wrong with that. So let's take the harsh way to scare people.
Yeah.
And that's what that performance that you saw where they try to, you know, because think about this. A lot of people, when they try to bash LGBT, the first thing, one of the second words after they call us gay, faggots, and, you know, whatever, the next thing they try to do is call us pedophiles. And I'm like, no, darling, that is reserved for a straight man. Don't try it, little boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they always try to like throw the negative context in with us. And it's like there is nothing negative. There's nothing negative in the context of LGBT at all. So, you know, they don't want to learn the pure form of LGBT lifestyle. So they're going to try to smear it.
Well, a common question people have after seeing Trump and Vladimir Putin together question the FBI and you know, the president of the United States taking Russia's side on every single issue is where do we go from here? What can we do besides vote?
Impeach his ass tomorrow, send him to jail tomorrow, put the RICO Act on him immediately, seize all his family's assets, including all his kids, stepkids, grandkids, future kids, grandfather, everything.
That's not necessarily something we have the physical ability to do. Like with yes, the everyday person, oh, you have the ability to go seize Trump's assets? I don't.
I'm not the federal government. The federal government has within its jurisdiction to do all of that and then some.
I'm asking for individuals, what we can as individuals do besides vote.
Pay attention, but not pay attention. What do I mean by pay attention and not pay attention? I did not watch anything today that happened on the news. I heard it secondhand, third hand, and fourth hand. Mm-hmm. I refused to engage in the live time frame of when that was going on. Why? It will destroy your life permanently. It will give you anxiety, high blood pressure. Mm. It will make you end up taking pills and seeing doctors to try to grasp your head around this Trump reality. I would rather hear about something that happened 4 hours later while slowly getting small tidbits in between. I have not watched the news since the day before the election that Trump and Z got into office. I will watch everything 4 to 6 hours later in terms of get the little pieces to prepare me to embrace what just happened hours earlier. But if you watch these things in real time, in real time frame, you are setting yourself up to be medically harmed in terms of what this information gives to you at that time frame. It's not worth my sanity in any way, or my health. He's not worth it. So that's why I say engage, but not engage. You don't have to watch it in real time. Watch it 9 hours later. Watch it when you feel that you can engage in that, but don't watch it at the live moment it's happening, because all you're doing is you're messing up your health.
It's so the message is you got to take a break from it. You can't be doing it all the time.
Walk away. Sweetie, go out in nature and fuck. Do something. Walk
children in nature.
So, like, you were just in Australia for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. So you got away from the American news cycle for quite a bit.
I never saw anything. I mean, I did tune into Facebook here and there. But remember, I'm also what I'm seeing in Facebook, I'm getting hours later or hours in the future.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, when I went to Norway, it was such one of the greatest things about it was to just get away from the news cycle here and to just be able to drop
because,
out.
Yes, because Norwegian news or Australian news is not about America.
Mm. Well, you Trump know, was on the news, but we just, you know, we were too busy. We didn't have a chance to watch it. We weren't allowed on social media, so we didn't see anything. We didn't know what was going on.
Trump is a nasty miasma. If you don't know what that word is, please look it up. You know, for those listening, it's a nasty miasma that can harm you. And it's not productive to always engage in it or to engage in it live. Mm. You should always still engage, because if you don't engage, they will keep doing these things. Mm. You still have to engage it, but don't engage in it. You know, when Trump goes on TV live and make a statement, your heart is palpitating. Is that good for you on a daily basis? Mm. No. Watch it later on.
There's a U.S. official of Homeland Security said that there are no signs that Russia is targeting this year's midterm elections with the same scale or scope it targeted the 2016 presidential election.
Well, we'll see.
So we're supposed to feel happy because he said that?
But she, well, it was a she, but Kirsten Nielsen, She is saying, though, that social media is being used to divide Americans. Mm-hmm. And no, that our own engagement in social media is just as effective as any sabotage.
No. Social media is making the world and everybody in lifetime aware of what's going on.
Well, listen, I don't know. I definitely see a lot, just drag queens alone outside of, you know, other scopes fight a heck of a lot more with each other than they ever have before. And I've been a drag queen since I was 18, and I just don't see drag queens. I mean, just tearing, fighting, looking for ways to get each other fired from their gigs more so than ever than I see on social media. And I would say, well, I would put Reddit there with the RuPaul's Drag Race subreddit. I would say a lot of those Drag Race forums on Facebook, a lot of Twitter accounts are all manipulating you to think things that, you know, not trusting each other and just attacking each other in ways that I just, it's heartbreaking to see. And every week, Mark and I ask ourselves, like, who is being targeted now?
Listen. Shade is shade. Back in the early day, this has always happened. But back then, we were using phones to curse each other out. The only difference is now, I can see you in a 3D context. I can see you visually. I can hear you visually and respond to you in a live setting. I don't think anything has changed. Queens have always been trying to backstab each other over the years. The only difference is back then you didn't find out about it in real time. Now we can find out about it in real time. Nothing's really changed.
Wow. Talk to any drag queen that's been around for, well, you've been around, you don't agree with this sentiment, but a lot of other drag queens do feel that way and share that sentiment. And it's unnerving.
A bunch of drag queens turned out to protest Trump.
Yeah.
When in London.
That was good. In London. That was healthy. Great.
They showed up in drag protesting and, you know, it made the rounds on social media. Shout out to you, Cheddar Gorgeous.
It was Cheddar Gorgeous.
And others.
Of course it was Cheddar Gorgeous. Yeah. She's gorgeous.
There's nothing wrong with protesting Trump.
I would say so. But, you know, you'd be surprised. You see some of these drag queens are like, I don't want to get too political. And I'm just like, girl, you don't know your audience.
Well, it's not only that, bitch. The minute you put on a woman's clothing, you have become political. So shut the hell up with that, mm-hmm. with that complicit bullshit statement. Mm-hmm. And you know what? There are some people who like to engage in politics and some who don't. I think the ones who don't, it knows that they really don't really have anything going for them. So if they stay neutral, it'll help them to get that next booking.
This is a really interesting news item. I guess a lot of fashion designers are saying that the demand for bulletproof clothing, clothes made out of like Kevlar and other types of bulletproof resistant material, is on the rise.
That's not true. That is not true.
You're not buying that?
No, I'm not buying that. That's called a bunch of white assholes using this situation in America as a means to try to push this agenda. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, let's sell bulletproof clothes. No, the real that this country should be concentrating on is removing guns. We shouldn't be enabling guns being around by going, mm-hmm. Now you could get, you know, even the other day I saw an ad for now you could buy a clear backpack for your kids to go mm-hmm. to school so mm-hmm. that you could see what's inside. I'm sorry, that's a form of invasion of privacy under the First Amendment. You don't need to see what's inside a child's backpack. No. If you're worried that guns are going to be inside a school, please remove the guns from the school. Please remove the guns, period. Australia has done it. I was in Australia. Do you know how beautiful and how liberating and how peaceful it felt to walk around and know that there is no one here at all with a gun?
Well, they have like hunting rifles and stuff, right? And they have sport guns. They just don't have like,
I guess the point that the designers are saying is that a lot of their clients are coming in from high-end drug cartels and politicians and people who fear their lives, and they're making basically clothing that serves a dual purpose of protecting them, but also is fashionable. Mm.
Well, I can see
also
that.
Also, the company that you're talking about, aren't they based in Colombia? So who told you to be around drug dealers and cartels?
Maybe well, they're from Colombia.
In the 90s, my roommate Joey had a fashion accessory that looked like a bulletproof vest, and he'd wear it out to the clubs, but it wasn't thick, like it didn't have stuff. It just had like a vest, and like we would all kind of take turns wearing it out to the clubs because it was really fun fashion.
Have you ever seen a bulletproof vest in person?
Yes.
And what's it like? Because I'm just realizing I don't think I've ever seen one.
Well, that's why those cops look all stocky. They're bulky. So
they're very bulky.
This looked like this, but it didn't have the bulk, and it was black. So it was very, and we were all very thin back then. So it looked fresh.
Remember, it doesn't matter if you have a bulletproof vest or not. If you are still being shot at point blank range, regardless if the bullet is stopped by the vest, you are still going to have internal ruptures from the impact of the bullet. It's not worth it at the end.
You know, another TV show that I want to see is Sacha Baron Cohen's a prank show called Who is America, where he convinces a lot of conservative politicians to do a public service announcement teaching kids how to shoot guns and aim for the head, not the toes. Did you see that?
I heard that there are a lot of Republicans that are pissed because he duped them into it, and they didn't know that it was now going to be a thing. And I think that they're all trying to go out of their way to try to stop it from being seen.
Yeah, they're screaming and throwing temper tantrums, and it's going to air.
Because they know that it's going to completely compromise their positions as a politician, and not for nothing, it needs to happen. There is a very vile set of Republicans that are out there that are complicit in what Trump is doing and supporting the direction he's going in, and they all need to be removed. I mean, think about this. This is the first time ever that a sitting president has been protested by a different country.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's the case. I'm sure some people have been protested before, right?
Never? Excuse me?
I'm sure some
not pro- to the to not the level. To this yeah, it's
not to this level. No, this is a first. This is a first, Mark. Mm. This is a first. I mean, think about this. Another country, a country that is supposed to be your closest ally, went out of their way to protest the president of the country. That's never happened before. Never. England is supposed to be the United States' closest ally. More than 250,000 people came out to protest Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the video of, I think it's Ali G, or Sacha Baron Cohen as Ali G, trying to punk Lady Bunny? And Lady Bunny was like, basically like, I'm going to suck your dick, and just closes the door. And I asked her about it one time. I was like, did you ever get to like suck Sacha Baron Cohen's dick?
She did not.
What did
it.
She say?
She didn't answer one way or another. She would not. She didn't.
I think she said no. It was just for.
She was very ambiguous about her answer. She was Lady like, Bunny, "Oh, I can't tell."
Lady Bunny, if you got to suck his dick, please tell me you swallowed with glee. That's all I have to say on the subject.
She doesn't swallow.
She makes guys use condoms. I don't know if you know that. She's very open about that. She says she doesn't suck dicks unless they have a condom on it.
She really is an old school bitch, ain't her?
Oh yeah,
that's sacrilege to you, isn't it?
Who, me?
Yeah.
oh, girl, if you gonna have dinner, have dinner.
Did you hear about that kid in the suburbs of Chicago who like sucked a 10-inch dick and it perforated his esophagus?
Okay, so I went online and posted on my friend's page. That boy, and I wrote, that boy is an amateur.
Mm.
I have handled 13.5 inches, and I have never choked. # no gag reflexes. He needs to go sit down in a corner.
I'm sorry. It's okay if you have to go to the hospital after a 10-inch dick. Come on. It's a 10-inch dick.
The boy was happy, though.
No.
He was bragging about it.
No. First of all, it tells me he has no innate skill whatsoever. Well, unless he was getting skull fucked.
The guy was rough, maybe. He was rough and just, you know.
Listen, Mark and I, when we went to see Whitney, and that documentary got serious, I had a box of popcorn in front of me, and I was chowing down on that popcorn, and it tore a hole in my mouth. So I imagine if you got serious with some big old dick, it would rough you up.
Well, so. I think the problem with that boy is he didn't learn how to relax his throat.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to learn how to relax those muscles.
Maybe it was so big he couldn't, you know. Because if you're a 10-inch dick, it might not just be long. It might be thick as hell, too.
There are a few like that, but, you know, and that's, I would say, always pick your battles.
Wise advice.
Listen, I once had this black boy came over, and let me tell you what happened. His name was Got Game with 3 A's. And he goes, oh, you know, I'm a little bit big. I'm like, well, could you please tell me how much is a little bit big? Because I probably might need a practice on something before you come over. He goes, I'm a little bit over 9. Girl.
Okay.
We were talking for 3 days. He's like, I'm a little bit over 9. 30 minutes before he came over, he goes, I'm actually 11 and a half. I said, that don't give me enough time to go and find to prepare myself for all of that. But you know what? Thank God I had a Vulcan inflatable. I'm not going to go anymore on that subject.
What?
Shut up. Don't ask.
A Vulcan inflatable?
That's all I'm saying on those two words. I went and do what I needed to do. So when he showed up, I handled him like Mount Kilimanjaro.
Okay, I'm just Googling Vulcan inflatable right now.
Well, like his dick look like a spotted airplane?
No, bitch.
I just don't know what you're referencing here.
Yeah, I Googled it and it was like a blow-up plane.
Okay, a Vulcan inflatable is the name of a latex company that makes inflatable dildos that you can add air to the proper size that you need.
Oh, I'm looking at that now. Oh, right. So if you Google Vulcan inflatable dildo, you'll understand what she's talking about now.
Right. That's Vulcan terrifying. Inflatable.
Don't do this. Don't do this at work, by the way.
I once sucked on a dick and I started choking on it in the middle of it because I think I had some. Like, I had to get up and get a glass of water to kind of like reset. But you know, I went back at it just like a trooper.
That's right. You listen.
You don't give up.
You do not. Yes. What does not kill you make you stronger.
Mm.
Is that one of the challenges from this season of Alt for Norge?
No, I wish. You were in Norway the same time I was in Norway. I wish I'd gotten a chance to see you.
I was hoping I was going to get a message from Fausto to tell me that you were coming because I was looking forward to seeing you stop through somehow.
Yeah.
You
were in Bergen, right?
Yeah.
For Bergen Pride. Where were you? I was in Bergen when we first arrived. So when you actually were in Bergen, I think I saw, because they call the gay days there Rainbow Days.
Yes.
Rainbow Dagen or something like that. Yes. But I didn't see you on the news, but I felt your presence.
No, at the time I was there, I was actually housed in a mall that has a hotel built in.
Oh, wow.
Right.
The mall hotel?
I love staying in hotels that are built into malls.
No, it was actually kind of cute.
You can shop until you drop.
What was your experience like?
You mean with a hotel in the mall?
Well, in Norway in general.
I love Norway. I personally just wish if they could invite me back every year until I finally die in 99 years' time. I love it there.
Mm.
I love the people. I love it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get enough of it. And I like the fact that every time I go, I expand my horizons and go to different areas that I've never been before just to see something more beautiful than the last time.
Did you eat any other food there?
Did
you have anything weird?
No, not this time around. My first time, yes, I had a few traditional Norwegian dishes that my friends Axel and his husband Andre treated me to. But this time I stayed on the more regular path of things.
Did you have some shit kaka?
I don't know who that is.
Shit cock is like meat cake.
No, I don't have an. I'm sure it's not spelt the way how you pronounced it.
No, it's based not. On, but that's know, how you pronounce it, pretty much.
Shit cock.
That's how.
Yes. That's a terrible language.
Yeah.
No, just like how I met this guy, his last name was Ass Mobile.
Oh, yes.
But that's based on how, you know, they put the accents over the different over the different alphabets to make his name sound like Ass Mobile. But that's wasn't how his name looks when you try to say it. So Shitkaka, that's an interesting name.
Mark's on the next season of Alt for Norge, which is the Great Norway Adventure. And it won their equivalent of an Emmy last year. And according to the article that I read about...
It's a Norwegian Emmy. They call it an Emmy.
The Norwegian Emmy.
Yeah.
Right?
Wonderful.
And it's one of Norway's top-rated shows.
Thank you. Thank you. I think you're going to enjoy seeing me on it. I had a lot of fun.
I asked my friend about the show, and he goes, yeah, it's a popular show that we all watch.
Oh, well, your friend's going to see a lot of me.
So well, do you think Mark should develop pins, fans, iPhone cases, T-shirts, or all the above as merch?
D, all the whatever is going to make somebody buy it, go for it.
Well, all right. We'll have to get some what should
stuff the, what should the shirt say? Like, my way or Norway? Or alt for Mark for Norge?
My way or Norway. Something, I have no intentions on selling T-shirts for DryCon because to me T-shirts can go either way. You either have the wrong size or the wrong color, and then they don't get sold.
What, you sold all your T-shirts last year?
I had no T-shirts last year.
Oh, you didn't? What were you selling?
No, I was selling everything but a T-shirt.
Oh,
right. I was selling everything.
I'm going to stand outside of DryCon and sell Vivacious T-shirts myself then.
Yeah, you don't mind if I actually, like, because I already have all the designs and photos here, and I'll just print my own.
That's okay. I'll just sue the fuck out of you in the process. Hi, Jesus loves you.
What is it? Isn't that a dry queen's catchphrase? Sue me?
I think so.
Yes, Nina Bonina, Osama Bin Laden, RuPaul, Charles Brown.
And when she said to RuPaul, sue me, RuPaul goes, okay, I will.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. Yes,
that
she
was
did.
My favorite moment of season.
Mama Ru has a new talk show coming out.
Yeah, watch out, Ellen. Ru's coming for your gig, too. And let me tell you, it doesn't feel good.
Maybe watch out, Wendy. Maybe watch out, Wendy Williams. But can we talk about the fact that Aquaria won, Cameron Michaels came in third, Asia came in fourth, and Eureka was somewhere in the middle.
I think we need to have a moment to acknowledge the death of butterflies who gave their lives for an extravagant performance. Mm. There, see, we had a moment of silence.
Yeah,
thank you so much for respecting the lives of. I said to some ran into two people who are vegans. They're like, did you know butterflies cross state lines? These are the senseless murder of butterflies for drag. Can you believe the ridiculous, senseless murder of butterflies? And I said, how many insects get murdered for your vegetables that you eat?
I don't know. I think they have a point. I stopped eating butterflies after that performance.
Or another one. How many insects have you killed with your car just going down the highway?
The bugs on the windshield. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, come on.
I'm like, stop making a big deal. Now, if
I forgive Asia O'Hara for killing butterflies.
If Asia O'Hara had came out on stage with bees instead, yes, I would be in a stink. But it's butterflies.
It should have been locusts. Locusts coming out of her vagina. Her vagina and says, feed and on the crowd, attack, my precious.
Let that shit attack RuPaul's wig, honey. That's a show.
And then she's left with like just a little piece of fur on one side.
No, after she attacks after the locust attacks RuPaul's from Asia's vagina, all that's left is that wig she had from Project Runway back then. That shade.
That's good.
That's us.
You know, some people say you're going to go to hell for saying that. I say you're going to heaven.
I'm going to go to hell for saying that.
You're going to heaven for that.
Okay, to all my RuPaul fans out there, please understand this. I don't think there's anyone on the planet that's a bigger RuPaul fan than myself. She's done so much for us before Drag Race.
We know you love RuPaul.
And y'all know I would take a bullet for that bitch.
You'd be RuPaul's Secret Service.
Get some of that Kevlar fashion.
I would be her Kevlar. I would be RuPaul's Kevlar vest.
Who wants to die for art? Vivacious does.
Only if it's Ru art.
So if a bullet was going like, say to like a dear friend of yours, like I don't know, me or Mark, you'd be like, eh.
Yeah. No shake.
But if it was RuPaul, you're like, I must die so that Ru can live.
You know that scream where you're like, no! That would be me running in slow motion towards the bullet to stop it. Yeah.
Would you give RuPaul like one of your kidneys?
I'd give her Lady Bunny's kidney. I like my shit.
If RuPaul like needed like fingers amputated or something, like she, you know, piano fell on her pinky, would you give her your pinky?
She'd have to call Lucian and get some white fingers. I can't help her with that. I will take a bullet for her, but I'm a bit selfish about giving away my body parts. Mm.
Did you hear about the CVS manager that called the police on a woman who was trying to cash in a coupon?
I this week I decided to stop reading about the hashtag Wild Black because it's so depressing to realize that all these petty Bettys and petty Beckys are coming to life doing this. And, you know, in a glorious moment of doing that, they think they're doing the right, godly, righteous thing. But I just like to read the end stories where that bitch got fired. This one got kicked out of work.
Well, that manager from CVS also got fired. But you know what's fucked up about him? He's a log cabin Republican, gay, living in the city of Chicago, wants to run for alderman. But then he also like was trying to get this plan passed where they were going to extend like this bike route through their neighborhood, like along the lakefront, because our lakefront park ends at a certain area. They wanted to kind of continue it. And so he collected signatures, but he himself ended up forging a bunch of the signatures, you know, saying like, oh, I just wrote it in for them or something like that. And so he's the one. So that's why he's got like fraud on his mind, is because he's the one committing the fraud.
Who's this guy?
He's the CVS guy? He's a manager at CVS. And it's the CVS that's right down the street from where we live. It's like all our friends shop at that CVS.
Oh, hell no.
This is the reason why I love Mark. He always does his homework.
Mm.
Go get him, Mark.
I don't know this queen here.
Well, I don't know him either.
Yeah, because I know a couple of log cabin Republicans. Because I used to work for a gay newspaper, and the owner was a log cabin Republican, and he had his little buddies around.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were just like, you know, very tame politically. Like they weren't, you know, they were.
Yeah,
not,
they don't just vote for Trump.
Well, not these days. God knows what they're doing today. But after today, I think a lot of people are questioning their, you know, I'd like you to know, think that a lot of people are questioning their alliance to the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. Well, facts are facts, America.
Honey, it's like when Trump held that upside down rainbow flag with a Sharpie LGBTs for Trump that he wrote himself. Wasn't that a clue?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Louise.
I think the reason why a lot of people are still defending Trump is because they are worried that their egos are going to be bruised. They would rather chop off their nose to spite their faces than admitting the fact that they sided with the wrong side of history. Sided with a buffoon, and they don't want to hear the I told you so. So they're just going to keep siding with him just because their ego is at stake.
I'm sad that, you know, that Whitney Houston's death has to, you know, a great documentary celebrating her life and getting us to understand the complex person that she was, that it stands in the shadow of this awful, awful person who happens to be president.
Yeah, it's we are living in some cantankerous times right now, and you know it's up to America. You know, it's like we can't keep waiting for the next person to solve our problem. We need to bootstrap ourselves to fix this problem.
Well, you know, a lot of people wanted Trump in office because they figured he's going to wreck it so bad that maybe we'll actually have the kind of change America really needs. But I don't know if that's really, that. You know, Susan Sarandon and a couple of other people have kind of, that's their thinking. But man, this is not any of the change I wanted at all.
This is not, I mean, seriously, I see the writing of Hitler on the wall from the get-go. So I'm not going to stop being a person that's, I'm going to keep protesting Trump and all Republicans for as long as I live. There is nothing good about a Republican. Sorry.
Let's wrap up the show by talking about our favorite Whitney Houston music.
Oh,
I Want to Dance with a Butch Queen. That was my favorite track.
Well, certainly she has so many amazing songs.
I believe the femme queens are the future. Teach them well and let them vogue the way. Show them all the butch queens they possess inside. One of my favorite tracks.
The song that I have the fond memories of is like, I Want to Dance with Somebody. It was playing. I was 19 years old. I was working in this restaurant that was owned by this conservative Christian, but he was having a bachelor party for somebody in his church and they'd hired strippers, right? And so there's the strippers and she's dancing to like, I Want to Dance with Somebody. And she has a brandy snifter glass filled with ice and she's putting it on her nipples as I walk by. She's like, you're doing a real nice job, sweetie, to me. And I said, thank you. So are you. But I just danced to that song just recently. I was walking by some place and I was with somebody. I'm like, let's go inside and dance.
How about a It's Not Right, But It's Okay, I'm gonna Smoke Some Crack Cocaine. Or how about the song Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, saving my life. I don't even know. I don't have nothing if I don't have you.
I just, you know, the song remember Whitney as being super energetic and young, you know.
What?
Like the Whitney, like I loved, is the one that was she first cut on this, hit the scene and everything was fresh and it was, you know, high energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whitney was, to me, a very beautiful, you know, think about this. Whitney Houston made all Americans fell in love again with the Star Spangled Banner.
And we hated that fucking song.
And we hated that fucking song. But think about this. Everything since she has done that, how many singers have tried to make America fall in love with that song and failed miserably, including Roseanne Barr.
And you know what they said in the documentary is that when she sang that, like they had changed like the chords or the notes. It went from like a 3-quarter thing to a 4-quarter beat.
Yeah, the time signature.
Yeah. Went from 3-quarters to 4-quarters, and the guy had did it for her, like, you know, and she's like, she hadn't even heard it, and she heard it once.
Yeah.
And that's when then she went out and sang it.
Oh, say. One of my favorite songs is My Love Is Your Love. Your love is my love.
It would take an eternity to break us
if the hands of Amistad don't. How does that? It was from the movie Amistad.
Oh.
Sing, Mommy. Didn't we almost have it all when life?
My favorite, yeah. One of my favorite songs from Whitney Houston is "I Bow Out."
I'm not familiar with that song.
Yes, it's a nice ballad, and also "Why Does It Hurt So Bad?"
Yeah, that's a great song.
Mm. Yeah.
So you can get a lot Whitney the Greatest. Her album has a lot of the stuff.
Greatest hits.
Yeah.
And I have that album, by the way. I have it on vinyl, and I also bought it on CDs. So I have both.
Well, Vivacious, I hope you have a lovely rest of the summer, and hopefully we can check back in with you soon. It's always a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the podcast. Thank you so much for having me.
I love all our conversations with you. All my conversations with you. We talk about once every 3 days. I'll talk to you in 5 minutes after.
That's usually the case, right?
We hang up and keep on talking.
The audience doesn't realize that what you hear of me and Mark and Vivacious talking is about 1%. And do you have this kind of friendship with other people in other cities that where you talk a lot on the phone?
Actually, yes. Yeah, actually, I have this friendship with a whole lot of straight kids.
So you basically spend all day on the telephone with people?
Literally, yeah. In between making sure my bookings are together, yeah, I'm always on the phone.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I don't believe in texting people. I believe in physically talking to them in person.
I do appreciate that.
As a matter of fact, today I just got off the phone speaking to somebody that might have potentially be on the next season, and it was just to let them know that regardless of where they got off on the show, no one can take away the fact that they are now a Rue Girl, and it's up to them to wield this platform into the mold that they need to use it to be for themselves.
I want to do a musical tribute to all the girls who've been eliminated first.
Well, that's what, 10 seasons of girls?
Yeah, I think that'd be a really good, or a podcast about all the Rue girls that got eliminated first.
I don't think a lot of them would ever want to still be brought back into the spotlight because, you know, it's a painful thing.
Well, Porkchop's pretty comfortable with it.
Well, Porkchop likes any form of attention with a name called Porkchop Girl. Yeah. So,
she likes a little sauce on the side.
Can you list all 10?
Certainly one of the most memorable early eliminated queens, besides James Mansfield, of course, is the costume designer from Phoenix, Arizona, who I'm blanking. She's very tall. Tempest DuJour, yes. We have a drag queen here in Chicago named Vivian DuJour.
Candy Ho.
Candy Ho was also lovely. You know, some of the best interviews we've done with the drag queens from Drag Race.
Nasha Lopez.
Yeah, that's the one.
Some of the most best interviews we've done on the podcast have been with the queens who got eliminated first.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a shame that, you know, so Tempest, it's like, you know, they try to make Tempest look like she was inadequate. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, don't do that. Stop.
I think this is their ageism. I mean, certainly Tempest deserved to be show, on for I, one I believe, more episode, at least.
I believe the show might probably exhibit some form of ageism to older queens, you know. And because remember, from like season 3, 4, 5, 6, Penetration was one of them that got eliminated first also. It's like they kept always trying to eliminate the old queens first. And it's like, why would you do that?
I didn't know that Coco Montrese was first eliminated.
She was not first eliminated.
On All-Stars? No. On All-Stars she was. Yes. Mimi, I'm first?
Yes. 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 Coco Montrese was first eliminated on her season of All-Stars. Morgan McMichaels was the first to be eliminated.
Penetration. Remember Penetration? She was voted by the internet to be on Drag Race and RuPaul's
Drag Race.
Oh, no, and you don't.
Right.
Venus Delight. She was season 2, I believe. She had the plastic surgery. We've talked to most of the first eliminated queens on the show. Kelly Mantle. She was lovely. Yeah.
She absolutely was lovely.
Yeah.
Kelly Mantle is doing very big Hollywood things right now. And I wish if RuPaul and them would turn around and acknowledge her for what she's doing instead of being very mum about her accomplishments.
I guess. Go ahead.
Shine some light on the queen, people. She's a fierce girl.
Was Shangela, when she was on her season, wasn't she?
She was eliminated first. Yes, she was eliminated first. Yes.
That's why they brought her back.
And then she ended up being fifth.
Yeah, and then she became, you know, the second runner-up to Trixie Mattel on All-Stars.
No, she actually won.
She technically won.
She won.
And there's rumors that Vanessa Vangie Matteo is going to be on the next season of Drag Race.
Yeah.
And that's why they've been like, Ms. Vangie, because they're trying to do this strategy where if they really believe in a queen, they're trying to like Shangela have her arc
spread over
several seasons.
Yeah, but see, sweetie, Miss Vanjie and Shangela. Shangela is a unique fierceness. There is nothing to Vanjie. It needs to stop.
You don't think Miss Vanjie has personality, charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent?
Sweetie, like Beetlejuice, walk back 3 times and go back in the mirror.
If you say her name 3 times, that's why she says her name 3 times, because that's how she exits.
Because that bitch will come out of the mirror and get you.
You don't like my cookies?
I don't like her cookies. I'll take the Grover's cookies instead.
Vivacious, we have some gorgeous vegetable meat lasagna that Mark made here. I wish you could come have some with us.
I was going to say mail me some.
Well, you have to come to Cooking with Drag Queens and do it.
See, y'all are trying to bribe me with that Sharon Needles edit, honey. I'm not crazy.
What's the Sharon Needles edit?
I don't know either. I just made that up.
You know, I have to say, Cooking with Drag Queens would not be the show it is today if it wasn't for Sharon Needles, for Alaska, for Pandora Box.
Shea Coulee.
Well, I would say, you know, Shea Coulee and Kim Chi benefited.
Venus. I love the interview with Kim Chi much.
She was was an early Kim Chi. That was before she was very doubtful of herself. And her experience on Cooking with Drag Queens, she said, gave her the confidence to go far on Drag Race. Mm.
Kim Chi made me fall in love with Cooking with Drag Queens. And by the way, while I was in Australia doing the Queer Expo, children who actually listened to Cooking with Drag Queens came up to me to let me know that they only came to the Queer Expo in Australia just because they heard of me from Cooking with Drag Queens. So I need you guys at Cooking with Drag Queens to know that your words have reached all the way to Australia.
Oh, crikey.
But you're technically, for the audience, you have not been yet. We have not filmed with you yet.
But that's okay.
Plan to.
Sweetie, if you close your eyes like Vanjie and Beetlejuice, you'll see me.
Vivacious.
Mother! I'm here, bitch!
Vivacious, I love you so much.
Love you, too. Love you, Mark.
Love you, darling.
Take care of yourself.
This was a long overdue. It's been, 3 months since Mark ran away?
I know.
Did you guys do a podcast while I was gone?
Of course we did.
Oh, well, there we go.
We had fun without you.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't the same. We didn't have our fact checker and our verifier with us. So we nearly got in trouble on a few subjects.
I'm sure.
Yes, we crossed the line.
We crossed the point of no return. There were lawyers calling my house.
You didn't have me to draw you back in.
No, we needed somebody to, you know, to pull us back in, and you were dearly missed.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's lovely for you to say that. I miss you guys, too.
And then he nearly told the world that you were on RuPaul's Drag Race.
I did not say you were on Drag Race.
You got very close.
How he's going to say that in so many different ways.
Well, that's interesting.
Before I left.
I should have not given a fuck, because I was the one deleting shit off of social media to keep the secret.
Oh, you were?
Yes. I love how you guys are throwing me out.
It's true. He was deleting stuff to not get himself in trouble.
Well, maybe I was on RuPaul's Drag Race too. How do you know?
Yeah, maybe this Norway thing is a whole scam.
Maybe it's all a scam.
I heard you showed up to Norway and RuPaul showed up on the stage, bitch.
Now there is rumors that on Alt for Norge this season there are a few Drag Race worthy moments.
Perhaps.
Oh.
Perhaps.
You're leaking. That is a leak.
I guess we will.
That's very open leak. To a very
interpretation.
Open to a interpretation.
Loosely interpreted.
All right, Vivacious. I'm calling it quits.
Bye.
Yes,
bye.
That's Mark trying to say himself right now. I will see you both. Good for you, Mark. Shut it all down.
Thank you, darling. I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast and talk to people like Vivacious if it weren't for you, if you're not a Plus member yet. What are you waiting for? Sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus.
Send your money. You got a dollar. I know you got a dollar, honey. We see you guys, you know, buying cute stuff on social media. Give us a tip. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and put a dollar in our tip jar. Help us bring Vivacious to Chicago.
That's right.
We got to get this quick. queen in the kitchen cooking up a storm.
Yes, we do.
We can't do the show without you. We thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.